I will ask Brajendra Krishna and Abhay Charan to come here and just explain. I told you the other day that we are making altars here in Ujjain and altars for the deities, and we are also not only just carving the altars, but we are also doing the gold leafing and completing the altars. And they have been displayed there, different sizes. And so come, and I mentioned about these two devotees yesterday. They were not there, so I couldn't introduce them. This is Brajendra Krishna, and this is Abhay Charan. Both of them are from the National Institute of Technology, and both of them did their engineering, and both of them were working very prestigious jobs. Where were you working? You were working with Reliance, and you were working at Goldman Sachs. He was working for Goldman Sachs, and they were doing very well naturally, and they quit their job after working for 2 years. They had to fulfill the requirements, working for 2 years, and then as soon as they completed their 2 years, they just came and joined. Actually, three of them were friends from before, and all three of them joined. Where is Bansidhari? Is he here? Come here. So, Brajendra Krishna and Abhay Charan and Bansidhari, all three of them are taking care of the altar department, and they are very, very efficient in managing the department. So, you can explain about the altars, like... Or, go ahead. Don't feel shy.
Doing everything.
Okay, thank you. You can see, generally we do it in three ways. You see, some devotees want it just wood. Like for example, like in Switzerland, four of my disciples have taken four altars, which are like this one that is unpolished, just bare, just simple wood. What they did actually, they took that. Actually, this idea came from one of them, who is an art, what should we say, that art evaluator. He is a PhD in art evaluation, like he can assess the value of art. Anyway, he's an artist, he's coming from that background. So he considered that that he would have his altar just bare teak wood, because teak wood has some very nice kind of shade in that. Not shade, like a distinct kind of design in the wood itself. And what he did, he took that and he just put oil on it. And as a result of that, just the wood has become enhanced. The design of the wood has become enhanced. So that is one thing that we are doing. And another one is the just wood in polish and then gold lift. That is what, say for example, our Ujjain altar, temple altar is like that. It was varnished or polished, and then we gold lift it. And then we develop another design that is a pearl white paint and then gold. And you can see that is the most striking one. The pearl white and then gold leaf. And as Avacharan described, like we can do any size, any design. All you have to do is just give the design. Like we have done quite a few of them, and just they gave us the design. For example, most really those who are from Gurgaon, they know Radhesham Prabhu gave his one design from Vrindavan that he saw, and we did it for him. How many of you saw Radhesham Prabhu's altar? You didn't see Atmaram? Yeah. And Radhesham Prabhu actually told me that what we did looks much better than the design that he gave us. In this respect, I must also admit that, you know, we have very fortunately we got a very good team of carvers. They're from Saranpur, where the carving actually takes place. They all are Muslim. And the person who is the leader of that group, Aslam, he is a very saintly person. Very saintly person. Like he's a Muslim, but he blends in with us perfectly, and very respectful, and very talented carver. Very talented carver. Anyway, so these are the facilities that we have available here. And some of you already have your altars. Like Giriraj, you got your altar already. And few altars are already in the making. Like Jamunacharya placed an order. And did you start his work?
Not yet.
He's sitting here, mind you. He won't be very happy with that answer. Whose is that middle one? That white and gold big one? Okay. Does it fit in with Jamunacharya's requirement? I give you the dimension. I see. Okay, anyway. So,
Anyway, there you can see the more domes are there, more attractive it becomes. Like some are just one dome, and generally we make with three domes, and the common ones are with four domes. Central dome, two side domes, and one dome in the front. So, anyway, so we just wanted to show you. Actually, they had a program of asking you to come to that their work area. But I thought that in that area, so many of you won't be able to, it will be difficult for all of you to go there. That's why I thought that we can have them set up here, and they would give their presentation, and now you can go in whenever, I mean after the class, not now. Just have a look at these altars. And at the same time, I want to express my very heartfelt thanks to these boys. They came forward to help this movement, and they're doing so much, they're taking up so much responsibilities. And I also see the amount of appreciation they're getting. Recently, we did some altars for Laguna Beach Temple. And the Laguna Beach Temple president actually thanked them profusely, saying that they could never imagine that the work would be of this quality. And, as I told you, many of you who came from South Africa, when you go back, you'll go and see the Phoenix altar, and I think that's a very, very nice piece of work. And, okay, so thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, we are going from one interesting chapter to another interesting chapter. Like yesterday, you found, how did you find the 12th chapter, which was describing the what is beyond renunciation and knowledge? Beyond knowledge and renunciation is pure devotional service. Now today it is the Hamsavatar. 13th chapter describes Hamsavatar is answering the questions of the sons of Brahma. Who are the sons of Brahma? The first sons of Brahma? The four Kumaras. And these four Kumars are something to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma felt that he is not qualified to answer that. You know why? Because it's not that the Brahma didn't have the knowledge, but because of getting involved in creative activities, getting involved in creation, he became affected by the mode of passion. And as a result of that, he did not have the proper mental makeup to answer the questions. So what did he learn from that? To be properly situated in Krishna consciousness, we have to be in the mode of goodness. Too much management is not good. It is better to be, especially those who are preachers, it's better for them to be a little withdrawn, belittle, aloof from the mode of passion and ignorance. That means be in the mode of goodness.
Tada rajastamo bhava kama lobha dayashtaje cheta etai anavittham sthitam shakti prasidati.
When the consciousness becomes affected by the mode of passion and ignorance, one becomes affected by lust, greed, etc. But when the consciousness is not affected by such influences, then one becomes situated in the mode of goodness. Sthitam sati prasidati.
But then again, in Krishna consciousness we have to do things. Therefore, is anyone taking care of that? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So when one becomes free from the influence of passion and ignorance, which generates lust, greed, etc., he becomes situated, he becomes fixed in the mode of goodness. And then only, evam prasanna manuso, then only the mind become completely peaceful. Not only peaceful, satisfied. Bhagavat bhakti yogataha. Due to the attachment to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his engagement in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasta Jayate. By situated in this or by becoming conversant with the science of devotional service, he becomes free from all material attachments. So it's a very, very wonderful process, and we can see that in that respect, a devotee is always honest. Brahma, he saw that his consciousness was not really his consciousness was not in a proper state to answer these questions. So he prayed to the Lord. Krishna himself is describing. Brahma prayed to him, and he appeared to him. He appeared there as Hamsavatar, the swan incarnation, and that the Lord appears in the age of Satyayuga.
And what does he instruct there? He instructs the science of meditation. The process for Satya Yuga is meditation. So this chapter is describing that. It may be little too technical, this chapter. Therefore, I would request that listen very carefully, and if you have any question, please ask. Please write down, and in due course, when I invite questions answers, I mean invite questions to answer, I'll try my best. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "The three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion and ignorance, pertain to material intelligence and not to the spirit soul." So important thing to note, the three modes of material nature pertains to the intelligence, not to the spirit soul. So in that respect, we can just go back to what you discussed the other day. What actually happened? The soul is here. Consciousness comes from the soul. The consciousness is projected through the body. And as a result of that comes the awareness of this material nature. Do you all remember? We discussed about the nervous system. How the nervous system ends, all the nerve endings are in some senses, and these nerves are carrying the perceptions of the senses to the brain center, the seat of the mind, intelligence and false ego, the subtle body. And say mind as the internal sense registers all those receptions. Now consider, conceive. All these material perceptions are coming to which point? To the point of the mind or the subtle body. Soul is beyond that. So who is getting affected by the modes of material nature? Mind and the subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence and false ego. So Krishna here is saying that the three modes of material nature are pertaining to the intelligence, not to the spirit soul. The modes of the influence of the modes of the material nature doesn't go beyond the subtle body. And the spirit soul is beyond the subtle body. By development of material goodness, one can conquer the modes of passion and ignorance. So, three modes are there. Okay, let us discuss about this briefly. What are the effects of these three modes of material nature? Mode of ignorance causes ignorance. Mode of ignorance causes illusion and bewilderment. That means not really understanding what is going on, not really understanding what is what. Then mode of passion, what does it do? It activates one. In simple words, we can say the mode of ignorance causes us to fall asleep, and mode of passion causes us to become active. Generally what happens, we throughout the day, we are so active, we work so hard. And as a result of that, from passion, in mode of passion we work so hard. And then at the end of the day, we become tired and fall asleep in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of passion, we work so hard. In the mode of ignorance, we fall asleep. Then what happens in the mode of, in the morning? We wake up and again we become active in the mode of passion. Then again at night we fall asleep. Again in the morning we wake up. So our domain of activities are actually being motivated by passion and ignorance. In passion we work and in ignorance we fall asleep. But mode of ignorance, I'm sorry, mode of goodness is beyond that. Mode of goodness actually is not of this nature. Mode of goodness is of spiritual nature. But when this mode of goodness is active in the material nature, when that mode of spiritual nature is functioning in the material nature, it is affected by passion and ignorance. Therefore, it is not pure goodness. It is mixed goodness. So what does the goodness do? Goodness helps one to become free from the influence of passion and ignorance. So the effect of the material goodness is to become free from the material modes of passion and ignorance. And then what happens? Then our becoming free from passion and ignorance, evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata. When he becomes engaged in devotional service, then he transcends the material nature. By through devotional service, he actually can go to the spiritual nature. And in the spiritual nature, he becomes situated in pure goodness, the real goodness. So in simple words, we can consider the effective mode or the modes of material nature actually is passion and ignorance. The influence of the spiritual nature is goodness. That goodness is present here to some extent, but not in a pure state, because it's material. Material nature, so it's affected by material nature, therefore it's not pure. But when one transcends the material nature, then he comes to the domain of pure goodness. So let us read it again. By development of material goodness, Krishna is specifically pointing out, material goodness, one can conquer the modes of passion and ignorance. And by cultivation of transcendental goodness, one may free oneself even from material goodness. Okay, now let us consider the effect of that, these modes in the material nature. Mode of ignorance, what is the result? Sudra. Mode of ignorance and passion? Vaishya. Mode of passion? Kshatriya. Mode of goodness? Brahmana. But this Brahmana is also in the material nature. Then transcending the Brahminical platform? Vaishnava. So Vaishnavas, devotees of the Lord, are actually situated in pure goodness. Therefore, their position is even beyond the Brahminical platform. A Vaishnava is beyond Brahman. When the living entity becomes strongly situated in the mode of goodness, then religious principles characterized by devotional service to me become prominent. When one becomes situated in goodness, then one becomes a devotee of the Lord.
One can strengthen the mode of goodness by cultivation of those things that are already situated in goodness. Therefore, there is this tendency to eat in the mode of goodness, live in an atmosphere which is in the mode of goodness, become active in the activities that are in the mode of goodness. Therefore, it is very important that those who are cultivating this mode of goodness, they function in the mode of goodness in all respect. And what is the ultimate functioning of the mode of goodness? Doing everything for Krishna. Then there is no consideration of passion and ignorance and so forth. When passion and ignorance are overcome, their original cause, irreligion, is quickly vanquished. Adharma is subdued by the influence of mode of goodness. According to the quality of religious principles, according to the quality of religious scriptures, according to the quality of religious scriptures, what are one's association with one's children or with people in general, the particular place, the time, activities, birth, meditation, chanting of mantras and purificatory rituals, the mode of nature become differently prominent. So these are the 10 factors that affect the situation that one is in. In whichever mode these activities will take place, he will be affected by this mode. Like, so saying, religious scriptures. There are scriptures in mode of ignorance. There are scriptures that are in the mode of passion. There are scriptures that are in the mode of goodness. And there are scriptures that are in the pure goodness. There are scriptures that are actually not the scriptures are in the mode of ignorance, but those scriptures are actually meant for the people in the mode of ignorance. To explain that point, there is, you see, this, the activities, the instructions are called mantra. What has been presented in writing is mantra. And when these instructions are applied, then it is called tantra. So, there are three types of tantras. Tamasic tantra, Rajasic tantra, and Satvata tantra. Tamasic tantra, there are tamasic tantras, they actually promote animalistic activities, which is called Pashtachar. Pashu means an animal, achar means activity. Then some tantras are promoting virachara, the activities of a hero, heroic activities. That is the human platform. And then there are daivachara, divine activities. That's in the mode of goodness. But the tantras that are speaking about activities of pure devotion, they are known as Sattata Tantra. For example, Narada Pancharatra, Srimad Bhagavatam, these are all Shuddha Sattvic activities. So in this way we can see that there are different types of tantras, different types of scripture. As you know, Purans, there is Tamasic Puran, there is Rajasic Puran, and there is Sattata Puran. So if you want to be situated in the mode of goodness, what kind of Puran you should read? Right. Sattva-Sattvic Purans. Then, The water also has its different types. Like the places, the water of the holy places are in the mode of goodness. Similarly, there are water that are in the mode of passion. There are water in the mode of ignorance. Like at least you can see, the alcohol is the water in the mode of ignorance. You take it and you will just immediately sink into the mode of ignorance. That's why we avoid all these the influences in different act. One association with one's children or with people in general. What kind of association should keep people in the mode of goodness? The particular place. What kind of place you should live? In the holy places. Time. What time we should become active? Early morning. There are people, they become active at night. I used to have a friend in Munich. He couldn't sleep at night. Just couldn't sleep at night. He used to just sleep during the day. And at night, what he used to do? He used to just go. When he couldn't sleep, he used to go pub hopping. Like there are some pubs that are open till midnight. Some pubs are open till 10. Then he would hop into the pub that are open till midnight. And some pubs that are open till 4 o'clock in the morning. Like that. So, and not only him, that's a person that he was very close to me in a way. And, I mean, I used to see him, but there are so many people that are like that. Especially in the West, we see that. And another thing is, I heard that in places like Las Vegas, when you go, you don't know whether it's day or night. The atmosphere has been created in such a way you can't really make out, because that means they're always in night. They have created a perfect tamasic atmosphere. So, place, time, activities, birth, in what kind of family one is born, that's also important. Meditation, chanting of mantras. Some people chant mantra, you know, for what? For harming others. They'll very diligently chant the mantra to harm others. Some mantras are for material prosperity. So that these mantras are in the mode of passion. And some mantras are for spiritual benefit. And they are in the mode of goodness. And some mantras are simply to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is in pure goodness. So out of these, which mode or which activities in which mode are to be desirable? Naturally, the mode of goodness. And what should be discarded? Passion and ignorance. Until one revives one's direct knowledge of the spirit soul and drives away the illusory identification with the material body and mind caused by the three modes of nature, one must cultivate those things in the mode of goodness. So what should one, until, in simple words, until one comes to the until one becomes free from the influence of the mode of passion and ignorance. As long as one is in the influence of mode of passion and ignorance, he must cultivate the mode of goodness, because by cultivating the mode of goodness, he'll be able to overcome the influence of passion and ignorance. And which is causing identification with the body as the self. It is due to the influence of mode of passion that we are identifying with the body. And passion automatically leads to ignorance. Therefore, there is a need to cultivate the mode of goodness in order to become situated in our spiritual identity. By increasing the mode of goodness, one automatically can understand and practice religious principles. And by such practice, transcendental knowledge is awakened. Isn't it such a scientific process? Practice the process, the result will be there. The spiritual knowledge, how will it awaken? The process is here. We simply have to follow it. If we don't follow it, it won't work. No matter how much we want to be situated in a transcendental platform, no matter how much we want to be situated in the spiritual platform, it won't happen unless and until you properly cultivate the mode of goodness. Now this one is a very beautiful analogy. Listen carefully. In a bamboo forest, the wind sometimes rubs the bamboo stalks together, and such friction, that friction generates a blazing fire that consumes the very source of its birth, the bamboo forest. Thus, the fire is automatically calmed by its own action. When the forest is completely burned by the fire, then what happens? The fire is extinguished. When the forest is burnt out, then the fire is automatically extinguished. Similarly, by the competition and interaction of the material modes of nature, the subtle and gross material bodies are generated. Competition means due to exert the prevailing influence in the body. What happens due to the three modes of material nature, as I mentioned, mainly due to the two modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, material bodies are generated. But then somebody will have the prevailing mode of goodness, some will have prevailing mode of passion and so forth. If one uses the mind and body to cultivate knowledge, then such enlightenment destroys the influence of the modes of nature that generated the body. Alright? The body was generated by? What caused the body to be? What caused this body to be? The interaction of the three modes, interaction of three material modes, and that caused the material body. Now, if one uses the mind and body to cultivate knowledge, we have to use both the mind and the body. Now mind you, both are material. One is gross, the other is subtle. Right? Mind is actually subtle body, the body is a gross body. Now both these bodies have to be utilized in order to acquire knowledge. Can we acquire knowledge without this body? No. Can we acquire knowledge without memory and intelligence? No. So Both these material bodies are utilized to acquire knowledge, just as, now go back to the analogy. The bamboos are rubbing with each other, and as a result of that, fire is generated. So similarly, due to the interaction between the mind of the body, knowledge is generated. And what this knowledge is doing, like fire, it is burning out the cause of our material existence. Just as the bamboo forest, where the bamboo generated by the fire caused by bamboos is burning out the entire forest, similarly, due to the combined activity of the body, subtle body and the gross body, the knowledge that is generated, that knowledge is going to burn out the cause of our material existence. Isn't it a wonderful analogy? Thus, like the fire, the body and mind are pacified by their own actions in destroying the source of their birth. What is the source of their birth? Material nature. So when the source is burnt out, are the bamboos left still in the forest? When the source is burnt out, is the subtle body and gross body is manifest? No. They have become now spiritualized. The body is there, but they have become spiritualized. You see, the difference here is, in this analogy, that bamboos are not eternal, but spirit soul is eternal. So the bodies that have been compared to the bamboos, that is burnt out, but the soul now exists in its pure spiritual identity. At that point, Uddhava actually asked the question. See, here is also another important thing that we should take note of. It is very easy for us to understand this topic. Because we already got pure devotion. Those who did not get pure devotion, it will be very difficult for him to understand. Therefore, on their behalf, Uddhava is asking, my dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future unhappiness and still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one in knowledge act just like a dog, an ass or a goat? This point is somewhat like what Priyavrata wrote this morning, read this morning. And his, at the end of reading that, his question was, that how can one act like that? That means how can, in spite of hearing that, how can one not act, not take up to pure devotional service? How can one not surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We are hearing it time and time again. How can we not? And Uddhava is actually replying the other half of the question, because they are dogs and hogs and camels and asses. Their mentality is like that of an animal. And that's why my response was, because they have dumb head, dull heads, dumb intelligence. Their intelligence is not working. And it's not they, it's us. Just consider how many times we are here reading and hearing, but you know, look at our consciousness, what's happening? We don't have to go very far, it's all here. The perfect example. Then Krishna mentioned, then Krishna is actually beginning. So that's why this part is very important, because these are pertaining to ourselves. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, a person bereft of intelligence first falsely identifies himself with the material body and mind." A person bereft of intelligence, as I pointed out, because of our heads devoid of intelligence. One identifies himself with material body and mind. And when such false knowledge arises, that means knowledge of identifying oneself with the body and mind, then within one's consciousness, and when such false knowledge arises within one's consciousness, material passion, the cause of great suffering, pervades the mind, which by nature is situated in goodness. Mind is actually situated in goodness. Do you remember? Mahatattva and the mode of goodness. Interaction of mode of goodness in Mahatattva generated what? The demigods and mind. Mind actually came out of mode of goodness. Then the mind, contaminated by passion, becomes absorbed in making and changing many plans for material in advancement. So mind thus becomes affected by, when the consciousness becomes affected by the modes of passion and ignorance, when it is affected by the mode of passion, then it pervades the mind. And then the mind, contaminated by passion, becomes absorbed in making all kinds of plans for material advancement. Thus, by constantly thinking of the modes of material nature, a foolish person is afflicted with unbearable material desires. See how we practically helplessly become entangled in the material nature. One who does not control the material senses comes under the control of material desires. One who cannot control his material senses, or one who cannot control his senses, to be simple. One who cannot control the senses comes under the control of material desires. And when one gets a desire, then what is the natural tendency? To fulfill the desire and be happy. He thinks that by fulfilling my desire, I'll be happy. Therefore, he gets entangled in his endeavor to fulfill his material desires. Thus, by constantly thinking of the modes of material nature, a foolish person is afflicted with unbearable material desires. One who does not control the material senses come under the control of material desire. Again, Krishna is actually repeating that. One who does not control the material senses comes under the control of material desires. And thus, bewildered by the strong waves of the modes of passion, bewildered by the strong waves of the mode of passion, such a person executes material activities. Although clearly seeing that the result of this will be future unhappiness. Not that he always sees that, but sometimes see, in spite of seeing that, he can't really help himself. I mean, this symptom is very, very prominent, very obvious in drug addicts. They know in most cases that it is going to cause them more misery, but still they cannot help it, because the body's urge is so strong, mind's urge is so strong, that they can't resist it. They're just forced into it. And as a result of that, they get involved in crimes, and their whole life is practically ruined. Although the intelligence of a learned person may be bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance, he should again carefully bring the mind under control. So what should an intelligent person do? Let's consider an intelligent drug addict. He will consider, I shouldn't do that. It's my senses that is craving for these intoxicants. I should check that, I should control that. And especially when he gets the higher taste. That is why only the devotees can get rid of or come out of very heavy drug addiction. Medical science practically says that it is impossible to come out of heroin addiction. Isn't it? What does the doctor say? Sunil Mohan? I mean, they have to give them some chemical stuff or substitute to keep them cool, right? Yeah, I mean, just otherwise they'll go crazy, heroin addiction. But there have been heroin addicts in ISKCON. They've given it up. And not only for 1 year, 2 years. I know one of our god brother was admitting the other day. Other day means some time ago. And he was telling me that he was a heroin addict. And he has been able to give it up. Why? Because of the higher taste and right association, right action, right activities. So then the mind condemns. Okay. Although the intelligence of a learned person may be bewildered by the mode of passion and ignorance, he should again carefully bring the mind under control. That is a sign of intelligence. By clearly seeing the contamination of the modes of nature, he does not become attached. A person should be attentive and grave, and never lazy or morose. Mastering the yoga procedures of breathing and sitting properly, one should practice fixing the mind on me at dawn, noon, and sunset. And thus gradually the mind should be completely absorbed in me. The process of which age? This process? For today? No. This is the process for Satya Yuga. But still, since Krishna is telling, we have to take this process very carefully, take this consideration very carefully. The actual yoga system as taught by my devotees, headed by Sanat Kumar, is simply this. The four Kumaras are residing in Tapoloka. And in Tapoloka, they are actually practiced, they are absorbed in meditation. And as a result of their meditation, they are seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, both within and without. The yogi, although through the practice sees Him in the heart, but then also he begins to see Him without. Because the Lord is all-pervading. So when you see the Lord, when you learn how to see the Lord, when you develop your vision to see the Lord, you see Him wherever He is, within and without. So here he is coming to explain. Uddhava actually asked him. So Krishna mentioned that the four Kumaras, mastering this art actually, having withdrawn the mind from all other objects, should directly and appropriately become absorbed in me, Krishna is saying. They propounded that process, the system of meditation or Ashtanga Yoga. Then Uddhava said, "My dear Keshava, at what time and in what form did you instruct the science of yoga to Sanak and his brothers? I now desire to know about these things." Then Krishna started to explain. Once the mental sons of Brahma, namely the sages headed by Shanaka, inquired from their father, about the difficult subject matter of the supreme goal of yoga. I was just realized that there are some yoga teachers here, and they should take this lesson very carefully. So the sages headed by Sanaka said, "O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over the activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind?" So, so that is the process. How can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Then Krishna goes to that narration of what happened to Brahma in relation to the four Kumaras. Can everybody hear me clearly? Because I shifted the mic a little bit. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, Brahma himself, who is born directly from the body of the Lord and who is the creator of all living entities within the material world, being best of the demigods, seriously contemplated the question of his sons headed by Sanaka." Sanaka asked Brahma. Now see, Brahma considered very seriously. The intelligence of Brahma, however, was affected by his own activities of creation, and thus he could not discover the essential answer of this question. Brahma himself couldn't answer that question. Why? As I mentioned earlier, why Brahma couldn't? Because, as it has been mentioned here, because his intelligence was involved or affected by the creation, activities of creation, that's why Brahma couldn't answer that question. And then what did Brahma do? Brahma fixed his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another lesson to learn. When we can't do something ourselves, what should we do? We should meditate upon the Lord, or we should pray to the Lord. We should depend upon the Lord. And at that time, in my form of Hamsa, I became visible to Lord Brahma. So at that time, Krishna appeared to Lord Brahma as Hamsa. So when Brahma and the four Kumaras saw them, they came forward and asked him, "Who are you?" The Lord appeared as Hamsavatar. So seeing him there, they asked, "Who are you?" Now look at his answer. It's very wonderful. So this is an analytical knowledge. "My dear Brahma," so the Lord is answering now. He asked, he told the sages, "My dear Brahmanas, if when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, since all souls are ultimately one with individuality, then how is your question possible or appropriate? Ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place both of yourselves and me? If you think, when you ask me who are you, and if you think that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, that is, you are a jiva, I am a jiva, and since all souls are ultimately one without individuality, then how is your question possible or appropriate? Ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place both of yourselves and me? If by asking me who are you are referring to the material body, then I must point out, so first it deals with the soul. If your soul and my soul are of the same category, and if all souls are one, then how can you ask such a question? And if by asking me who are you are referring to the material body, then I must point out that all material bodies are constituted of five elements. All material bodies are constituted of five elements, that is earth, water, fire, air and ether. Then if that is the case, if you are addressing to a material body and the material body is made of five elements, then you should have asked, "Who are you five?" If you consider that all material bodies are ultimately one, being constituted essentially of the same elements, then your question is meaningless, since there would be no deep purpose of distinguishing one body from another. Thus, it appears that in asking my identity, you are merely speaking words without any real meaning or purpose. Krishna continues, Hamsavatar continues. "Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me." So how he is coming to the point of meditation, of dhyana? "Within this world, whatever is perceived by mind, speech, eyes or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by straightforward analysis of the facts. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. A person who has thus achieved me by understanding that he is not different from me realizes that the material mind is lodged within the sense objects because of constant sense gratification, and that the material objects are existing prominently within the material mind. Having understood my transcendental nature, he gives up both the material mind and its objects. So the point is, the ultimate cause and effect of this material creation is interactions between the objects of the senses and the mind. The senses are only the medium. The mind, through the mind, consciousness is flowing through the senses to the objects of the senses. And then the mind registers those objects of the senses. Now, we can consider also, objects of the senses are there, the senses are open, senses are awake. But when mind is not there, do we register that? Like right now, are you seeing what is at the background there? But are you seeing it now? Why? Because now your mind has been projected. As long as the mind was not projected, you didn't notice that. You didn't see it, although the object was there. So this is our experience in the material nature is an interaction between the objects of the senses and the mind. I'll read this point again. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense object. Natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. Mind is going there and they are coming to the mind. Both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. So where the spirit soul is? Behind or inside. Around the spirit soul, the body with the mind and the senses, and it is interacting with the material nature. In that way. A person who has thus achieved me by understanding that he is not different from me realizes that the material mind is lodged within the sense objects because of constant sense gratification, and that the material objects are existing prominently within the material mind. Having understood my transcendental nature, he gives up both the material mind and its objects. So, he gives up the objects of the senses. And he also does not then allow the mind to go out. So this is one important aspect of yoga. Yoga has 8 levels. What is the 5th one? The 5th one, very good. The 5th one is pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawn. Withdrawn. Mind is now withdrawn. It's not letting the mind is not going to the objects of the senses and interacting with it. Mind is withdrawn. Okay, now in the then ultimately what actually happens when the mind is withdrawn, then only meditation begins. Yoga teachers, meditation is not sitting in some yoga posture in the middle of Melbourne or London and meditate. No. The prerequisite for meditation is withdrawal of the senses from the objects of the senses. Withdrawal of the mind from the objects of the senses. Pratyaha. Then only one is able to meditate. The spirit soul is trapped in the bondage of material intelligence, which averts him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. The soul is trapped in the bondage of intelligence. And what is intelligence doing? Intelligence is engaging the consciousness constantly in the illusory modes of nature for sense gratification. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness. Krishna is saying that there are three stages of consciousness in the material body. Material body perceives three states of consciousness. What are those three states of consciousness? Wakeful state, dream state, and deep sleep state. When both the body and mind are active, then it is a wakeful state, right? When the body becomes inactive, but the mind is active, then it is a dream state. When both the body and mind are inactive, that is deep sleep. So, but Krishna is beyond these three stages. It's interesting actually. It's interesting because, now look at it, the way Krishna is saying, wakeful, dream, deep sleep. And he is beyond that. That means he is not beyond wakeful state. He is beyond deep sleep state. Does it make sense? At least that's the order that Krishna is using. Now I'll try to explain why is that. Okay, because our wakeful state is both body and mind are active in which domain? Material. Then the body is not active. Only mind is active. Dream state. Mind is active where? In the material domain, in this material region. Now both mind and body are not active. What is that state? Deep sleep. Although the deep sleep is in ignorance, but at least in deep sleep, either the body and mind are not active in the material nature. Now beyond deep sleep, is the region of spiritual reality. The problem is that through deep sleep we actually come very close to the spiritual world. Because in deep sleep we are not active in this material world. Right? Either gross body or subtle body, we are not active. So that way we are close to spiritual world because we are not active in the material nature. It is something like, you know, there is one domain, India, and you go to the border When you go to the border of Pakistan, aren't you very close to Pakistan that way? Only thing is that you have to cross the border. When you cross the border, you are in Pakistan. So similarly, through this, in the region of deep, in this state of deep sleep, we come very close to the border of the spiritual sky. Because our material entanglement, material involvement has been withdrawn considerably. It's only a matter of waking up there. But in order to go to Pakistan, actually Pakistan is not a very good idea example. Let's consider Canada and America. So you're very close to American border from Canada. But in order to enter into America, you'll need a visa. Without the visa, you won't be allowed to go there, enter there. And what is that visa? The visa is the application to Krishna. And what is the procedure for applying to Krishna for the visa? Devotional service. So it is only through devotional service that you can enter into that region. Otherwise, what's happening? We're coming very close to that border, but we can't enter there into that kingdom. That's why what's happening? We are coming to the border, but coming back again. We are sent back. Not allowed. Go back. So we are coming, we're waking up again into this material domain. So Krishna is saying the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. Becoming situated in me, the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and the material mind. He'll give up the sense objects and the mind. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. So what is false ego doing? False ego is entangling him, entangling the soul to the body consciousness. False ego means false identity, bodily identity. And it motivates him to award, or rather he awards him exactly what opposite to what he desires. That means, what does a living entity desire? He desires enjoyment. But all his endeavors are leading him to what? As a result of his desire for enjoyment, he is engaged in different activities. But what are those activities leading him to or rewarding him? He wants enjoyment, but what is getting? Suffering. So that is Krishna is pointing out. He motivates him to desire something, but he gets exactly opposite to what he desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. And so what Krishna is advising? Stop your mundane activities for sense gratification and just become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. According to my instructions, one should fix the mind on me alone. Pratyahara, then what? Dhyana.
meditation.
Meditation means what? Actually, meditation is not a difficult business. To meditate is not difficult. Just consider how easily you can meditate on money. Practically everyone is meditating on money from morning till night. In the material nature. I'm not talking about the devotee. So it's meditation. You're meditating about money. Meditating about sense gratification. Meditating about the beautiful objects of these allurements of material nature. But what Krishna is suggesting, no. Don't think of those things. Withdraw your mind from that and project it on me. That is meditation. According to my instructions, one should fix the mind on me alone. If, however, one continues to see many different values and goals in life, rather than seeing everything within me, then although apparently awake, one is actually dreaming due to incomplete knowledge. He is actually dreaming. He is not fixed in reality. He is dreaming about this dream world. Just as one may dream that one has wakened from a dream. Those states of existence that are conceived of as separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no actual existence. Anything that exists without the Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't have actually any existence. Although they create a sense of separation from the Absolute Truth, just as the seer of a dream imagines many different activities and rewards, similarly because of the sense of an existence separate from the Lord's existence, the living entity falsely performs fruitive activities, thinking them to be the cause of future rewards and destinations. So this point, although I mentioned, but since Krishna mentioned it here, I will repeat. While awake, the living entity enjoys with all of his senses the fleeting characteristics of the material body and mind. While dreaming, he enjoys similar experiences within the mind. When he experiences something with all his senses, that is our apparent wakeful state. When the senses are inactive, or the body is inactive, but the mind is active, that is dream. While dreaming, he enjoys similar experiences within the mind, and in deep dreamless sleep, all such experiences merge into ignorance. That means no more awareness. By remembering and contemplating the succession of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep, the living entity can understand that he is one throughout the three stages of consciousness and is transcendental. In all three stages of consciousness, he is one. Therefore, he is not of material nature. Therefore, he is transcendental. Thus he becomes the Lord of the senses. You should consider how by the influence of my illusory energy, these three states of the mind caused by the modes of nature have been artificially imagined to exist in me. Having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, you should utilize the sharpened sword of knowledge acquired by logical reflection and from the instructions of sages and Vedic literatures to completely cut off the false ego, which is the breeding ground of all doubts. All of you, so this is a very important point. Why do we doubt? Which means, why don't we have implicit faith? Because of false ego. Now, how to cut the false ego? For that we need knowledge. With knowledge, these doubts will be dispelled and the false ego will be cut. All of you should then worship me who am situated within the heart. One should see that the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind. Because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow, they can be compared to the streaking red line created by whirling of a fiery stick. You got the example? You take an incense stick and rotate it, what do you see? You see a band of light. But is it real? It's just one little fire on the tip of that incense stick. But it's creating all kinds of impressions. Flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. They can be compared to the streaking red line created by whirling a fiery stick. The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world, he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal wakefulness, dreaming and dreamless sleep. All such varieties of perception, however, are actually Maya and exists only like a dream. Having understood the temporary illusory nature of material things, and thus having pulled one's vision away from illusion, one should remain without material desires. By experiencing the happiness of the soul, one should give up material speaking and activities. If sometimes one must observe the material world, one should remember that it is not ultimate reality and therefore one has given it up. By such constant remembrance up until the time of death, one will not again fall into illusion. So, that's again the same point. We should fix our mind on Krishna even until the point of death. And that will give us the passport to enter into that world. Just as a drunken man does not notice if he is wearing his coat or shirt, similarly, one who is perfect in self-realization and who has thus achieved his eternal identity does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. So again, another very nice example. The extreme opposite appears to be alike. Right? A madman and a pure devotee. The activities are quite alike. The madman can't even relate to his normal consciousness. And a pure devotee also does not relate to his apparently material consciousness. That's where his activities, whatever is happening to the body, he is not at all concerned. As it says, that whether the body is sitting or standing, he is not concerned. What's happening to the body, he is not concerned. Because he is lost somewhere else. He lost himself somewhere else. It is like a state of a madman. Krishna here is giving the example of a drunkard. Does the drunkard have any consciousness of his body? Generally not. At least we heard that. I am sure many of you do not even know what it means to be drunk. If not all of you. The material body certainly moves under the control of supreme destiny and therefore must continue to live along with the senses and vital air as long as one's karma is in effect. As long as we have karma, as long as our karmas are not totally burnt out, the material body will function. But this functioning of the material body will be according to the guna and karma. Therefore, a self-realized soul is not at all concerned about that. It will happen. Whatever will happen, is destined to happen in the material body will happen because it is the matter of guna and karma. Anyway, maybe today is not, there is not enough time. Sometime I will tell you about some findings I had in some very deep discussion with a friend of mine who is a neurophysiologist. Okay, let's finish this chapter and let's see if we have some time we can briefly tell you what that finding is. Like how the karmic principle actually is a scientific fact, is a scientific reality, guna and karma. The material body certainly moves under the control of supreme destiny. Yeah, okay. The karma is in effect. A self-realized soul, however, who is awakened to the absolute reality and who is thus highly situated in the perfect stage of yoga, will never again surrender to the material body and its manifold manifestation, knowing it to be just like a body visualized in a dream. My dear Brahmanas, I have now explained to you the confidential knowledge of Sankha and by which one philosophically distinguishes matter from spirit and also Ashtanga Yoga. So in this chapter, Krishna explained to the four Kumaras the philosophy of Sankha and Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Philosophy of Sankha, analyzing, and then Ashtanga Yoga is taking the spirit soul free, making the spirit soul become free from the bondage of matter. By which one links up with the Supreme, that is the Ashtanga Yoga. Please understand that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, and that I have appeared before you desiring to explain your actual religious duties. What is the religious duty for Satya Yoga? Krite Yadhyate Vishnu, meditation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O best of the Brahmanas, please know that I am the supreme shelter of the yoga system, analytic philosophy, virtuous action, truthful religious principles, power, beauty, fame, and self-control. All superior transcendental qualities, such as being beyond the modes of nature, detached, the well-wisher, the most dear, the super soul equally situated everywhere and free from material entanglements. All such qualities, free from the transformation of material qualities, find their shelter and worshipable object in me. Lord Krishna continued, my dear Uddhava, thus all the doubts of the sages headed by Sanaka were destroyed by my words. Fully worshipping me with transcendental love and devotion, they chanted my glories with excellent hymns. The greatest of the sages, headed by Sanaka Rishi, thus perfectly worshipped and glorified me, and as Lord Brahma looked on, I returned to my own abode. So, I have about 10 minutes. Should I ask for questions or should I tell you what my finding was through the discussion? Okay. It's a neurophysiologist. What does neuro means brain. Those who master the art of the physiology of the brain. So brain actually is responsible for all the functionings of the body. Now, the brain has one region called homunculus. So, homunculus is the shape of our body. Not in the sense that it looks like the body, but it has different aspects of body in different regions of the homunculus. And accordingly, the activities of those parts take place. The cause of our actions actually is in the homunculus. Right? Is it clear? Say, for example, I am raising my hand. What is causing me to raise the hand? The action in the homunculus. Right? And the homunculus is in the cortex of the brain. So, so now this leads to, so at least one point we understood, whatever we are doing in this body is actually happening here first. Alright, Suleiman? In the here means in the homunculus. Like, and the homunculus, like some part of homunculus is representing the hand. So the action, some stimulation in the homunculus is causing the hand to act. The legs are kicking. What is causing that? Some stimulation in some part of the homunculus that is representing the legs. There's another doctor here, Suman. So you can also give your comment or correction. Is it all right up to this point? Okay. And so now the question actually arises, at least now we came to the second step. The first step is all the actions of the body is actually happening due to the entire body is represented in the homunculus, right? Activities of different parts of the body is taking place due to the agitation of the homunculus, is the second point. This is, up to this point, the neurophysiology perfectly accepts. But now, the consideration is, what causes the stimulation? That they do not know. Medical science cannot go to that point. The basic consideration of stimulation will be desire. Desire is causing the... Then it goes to the next point. What causes the desire? Then you go to karma. It is not what the mind is desiring, But what is causing the stimulation to the homunculus? That is the karma. And karma is being guided or reflected by the gunas. So does it make sense? Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasah. So don't think that you are the doer. Right? Can you go back to the point now? A living entity is actually doing everything according, everything is happening according to the karma of the past and the modes of material nature. But ahankara vimura atma kartaham iti mannati. We are not the doers. Like whatever is happening in the homunculus is causing a reflection, and that may appear to be like a desire. But whatever is actually happening when the desires are fulfilled, it is, as at least the functioning of the body is predestined by aguna and karma. Make sense? Sunil Mohan? Yeah? Sure? What about Suman? What about everybody else? So that is what Krishna is saying, that the self-realized soul doesn't get affected by the situation of the material body. He stands aside because he knows whatever is happening in the material body is just happening or is bound to happen because of the guna and karma. Until his karma is totally burnt out. And when the karma is burnt out, okay, goodbye to this material body. Thank you all very much. So, we have just about 3 minutes left for some questions. If there is a burning question. Okay, Lila Madhuri. And then I'll take Brajaraj's question also. No, no, give it to Lila Madhuri first. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't know who is Lila Madhuri. But obviously, she was not a man. Okay. Is it from this chapter?
Yeah.
Oh, you meant this from the morning, you are saying? From the morning? Yeah. Who chose? That's it. Yeah, okay.
Why did he choose to write 11th temple after 10th temple, considering
that? Yeah, he is, as I mentioned yesterday, like this is the conclusion. 10th canto is not the conclusion. This is the conclusion. Up to the 10th canto, what has been described is being concluded here. You get it? Like this philosophy, did you understand everything after reading 10th canto? So? So that you can understand, he wrote this 11th canto. So that we can understand what, up to not only 10th canto, all this 10th, what has been described in Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately coming to this. This is one section and it goes on. The 11th canto has been considered to be the forehead of Krishna. 10th canto is the face. Up to the face, you have seen the person, recognized the person. Right? And now, the forehead, understand the person and what has been mentioned there. Okay? Thank you. I mean, is it clear? Your question is clear. I mean, your question is you get the answer to your question, like, why Vasudev wrote? Vasudev presented in such a way that we can digest it, we can understand. He described everything up to 10th canto, but in the 11th canto he is giving the concise form of understanding through this Uddhava Gita. Yes.
So, my question is, how can we understand that apparently certain looking holy places or different foods, they are not affected by whatever situation?
Yeah, because in the age of Kali, things have gone upside down. Right? Most sanctified, most pure places have become the dirtiest places because of the influence of Kali.
Whereas, potential
is there, but it's not really visibly manifest. Like, look at India, the state of affairs. How is it? Does it look like a holy place? That India has become the most, what you say, you know, the most degraded of all places today. Right? This place was, I mean, this place, how things turned upside down, I'll just give you an example. The other day I was in Dubai and I was telling them that this was a desert, but they turned it into a paradise. But India was a paradise and they turned it into a desert. When you come to India, I mean, look at this, not only how the things are, the way things are being carried out, you know, so much, you know, so much corruption, you know, so much, you know, so much unfair dealings, so much unscrupulous, you know, behavior. It's sad. And this is the age of Kali. Because of Kali's influence, it's happening like this. What to do? Therefore, we just have to accept whatever is going on, but get involved in Krishna consciousness. Whether you will go or not, you personally ask whether you will go or not.
My question is that I have a faith that I must go to different holy places to attend Krishna consciousness. But the many other people ask me question that they do scientifically that this faith is not affected by moral
I told you, like, in the due to the influence of Kali, everything turned upside down. They are not the way they should be. It has become in a very, very unfortunate state. Like, and then you can say that if you really want to see the holiness of the place, then just go to ISKCON temple and just stay there, don't go out. But in that sense I'll say, Ujjain is a little exception, somewhat little exception. Because, you know, see, we went to the temple, Mahakaleshwar temple yesterday. Did you find any panda harassing you? No. But you go to any other holy place, I mean, it's very difficult, you know, like, to even, you know, enter there. Like, you know, the whole atmosphere is, they have created such unpleasantness in the whole atmosphere. That's why I tell you, at least when they come to ISKCON temple, we should give a break to the pilgrims. Don't ask for money. It's happening in some ISKCON temples also, unfortunately. And some other day someone told me about one temple, that he went to a temple and 6 people approached him for donation. You know, that was not necessary, because you know, it leaves a bad impression. Like, I'm going to make a point to that, you know, like present it to our body. And let's make a policy not to approach people for donation. Here in this temple, we made it very clear, don't ask for donation. And donation comes. People go out of their way to donate. For that matter, I want to mention that how many of you went to the midday meal? Midday meal setup, midday meal kitchen. How did you like that setup? Is it very good? That's what I hear? Okay. I heard it right. And someone became so impressed with that setup that two of them actually, they wanted to find out what they actually needed in midday meal setup. And so they were told that we needed 2 vehicles for supplying the prasad. And immediately 2 of them responded and they pledged to donate 2 vans for delivery. Each van is costing about 5? No. They want a big van, not the small van. They place it. No. Jamunacharya, what was your? Huh? 100,000 vans. That is? 6,000, 6 lakhs, not 5. $6,000, no, 6 lakhs, not $6,000. $10,000. So they want us to buy a big van. Anyway, whatever it is, 6 lakhs, yeah, whatever you can get for that. And those two very generous personalities are Jamunacharya Prabhu and Rasa Rasik Prabhu. Can you please identify yourself? Jamunacharya is from South Africa and Rasa Rasik is from Malaysia. So, thank you very, very much for your generous attitude. So, anyway, so we can see like how without even asking, people just give. They went out of their way to ask what we needed. And when they were told that this is what is needed, they said, okay. Okay. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande.